Okay, you were saying, that when you went to high school, it was in the old school. And did you go to the new school at all? Because when did the old school burn, as far as your memory is concerned?
Well, the old high school in town, I think, never. If it burns, I wasn't aware of it.
No, I'm sorry. It was another school that burned. No, the old school houses the administrative office.
Community, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, no, that was the one that I attended after I left the country school. I went through 9th and the 10th and almost up to the 11th grade, and that's when I went into the service, into the Navy. But I recall that it was adequate, but not too modern from what we have now. I can recall a big thing for me was taking a couple of girls to the proms, you know, these high school proms. I was going to Norco High School there, and it was basically in the same basketball court that they have now, I guess. It was just decorated to the theme of whatever particular one they had for that dance, and but it was quite a thrill, you know, because I was probably 17 years old at the time. Pretty big thrill for me, or 16 maybe, even 16 or 17. And back then, you take the girls, and they get the girls all dressed up in their gowns and everything, and you'd be all dressed up and getting carnations. And I never forget this one I took. Her mother sat up in the balcony and watched us at the dance. I said, "Oh, this is a lot of fun." There says Mama, you know, watching us. So, yeah, but I guess that's the way you're doing back in those years. As far as the newer schools, I had no recollection of any of them, because they were out of my age bracket.
Did you have your own car in the years you went to high school, or did you take the bus even in high school?
No, I had my first, I bought my first car, and I think it was a 1936 coupe, and being on the farm, my father says, "Well, if you want a car, you got to work for it." So I worked for it, but I started when I was 14. Well, that particular time, I was making 25 cents an hour, and I was 14 years old. But of course, the men was only making 75, so that wasn't too bad a wage back then. So I was making 25 cents an hour, and it took me 2 summers to save up some money to buy this car, which cost me $200. It was a used car, in Stilling, a few years old. But that was a big thrill for me to have my own car and to be able to drive into town. And have my little car, and it had a unique thing. It had the trunk, small trunk in the back. We figured out as young people, kids, that we could turn this trunk around and make a rumble seat out of it, put some seats back there. So we've done that. So I had a little rumble seat in this little Chevy car. And then I think I had that for a while, and then the next old car I bought was kind of unique. My father had purchased an old car. It was a 32 Oldsmobile. And it was a big old touring car. And we had bought it for Asik for the farm to tear down and make into a runabout or a truck or something like that to run around in the orchards with. We used to tear the whole top of them off and, you know, just leave the body part and then put a rack on it for hauling stuff. Well, anyway, I says, no, that's too good a car to do that with. So my car wasn't working too good anymore. So he said, well, okay, I'll let you buy that. Well, the nice thing about this little car was it was a touring car. It had wheel tires on both sides, and I was a 17-year-old kid. You know, that was quite something. Had the two tires on either side setting in the fenders, and it had shades that pulled down on all the windows, and a great big steering wheel, and a great big, a tremendously big car. But I had more fun in that car just as a young fella. You know, so that was more fun. And of course then, later on, I graduated and get two a little bit better cars, but that's some of the experiences I remember is having in my high school, you know, going to school for years, in the cars.
Scrambled eggs on that cat,
what was that from? Oh, that's just one of these fellows doing
it. Oh.
That's not enough.
Because you enlisted in the Navy, didn't you? You weren't an officer.
No. No. I didn't get into it.
So you're still running the family business here in Northville, and you sell apples and cider and donuts and things like that from your store. Is your cider mill back here in the, where is your cider press?
Cider press is right in the same building here. Probably because we're in the orchard business and we were mostly wholesale for a long, long time, and we would sell a few apples out of what we called the barn, which the barn was just the building that we were basically sitting in, but there was nothing in there except the place to park trucks and things like that. And it was kind of a like barns look, you know, they wasn't too good looking. So this is where we sold our apples from, what we sold, and the rest of them, of course, all the big share of them went all to the big stores. Like we sold to Kroger's and Food Fair, Detroit Eastern Market, and
so Farman's Orchards actually distributed pretty far and wide then.
We have sold to big outlets. We have sold pears to Gerber's, which make baby food, a lot of pears. We have sold apples to pie companies, Speedy's pie companies, big processing companies, Mott's, we've sold to some of the big chain stores, Kroger's, A&P, Food Fair, which is now Farmer Jack, all of those stores. And besides this new volume that we grew, we also went to the Eastern Market, Detroit, daily. Like we had started, normally we'd start sometimes in September or October, and we go right straight through until almost June. Mm-hmm. And that would be like 6 days a week. Because you had to, when you're growing that amount of apples, they got to be sold someplace. So we sold a lot of big outfits, and we packaged them, we packaged them in boxes, we put them in bags, these plastic 4-pound bags, and we've done about everything. And that was what we, when we were wholesaling, more so back then. Then as we declined as far as the amount of orchards and the amount of apples we grew, that's when in 1972 we got into more in the retailing end of it. We don't sell to the big chains like we used to. Well, we don't anymore, period. Everything is handled now through the stores. We used to run pick-your-own operations. We sold a lot that way. Pick-your-own operations got pretty bad because I had lawsuits. I had 5 lawsuits in 4 years because of people slipping and falling on something or off a ladder or stumbling or tripping or something or another. There was always lawsuits. Well, when you're being sued, the insurance companies they just dropped you. 3 insurance companies, and that was it. They would have been the only one insurance. So that took care of pick-your-own. So we had, in 72, we had the cider press, the donut machines, and more retailing, and the buildings was completely refurbished into a farm atmospheric type barn wood. And antiques and tables added. So it's a very relaxing place to come because of its quiet and unique type of antiques and potbelly stoves and this type of thing we have in here. And so it has worked out very good for us since we went that route. We basically, we open up around the 8th of August, and we close very latest. We have taken it through Christmas, but now we're closing up before Christmas. Any of the apples that I have left now, when I close the buildings, I have a cold storage that's on the farm, or connected to these buildings. That's something I should mention. The building is 40 by 60 and will hold 12,000 bushels of apples, and it's refrigerated, and it's usually kept at around 34 degree temperature. This is what keeps apples crisp and good for a long time. When the season ends, sometimes I've had as much as 1,500 Bristol Baptist left. Now it's the problem of what do you do with this many apples? So there's, you have either choice of sending them to another juice plant to juice up and make it into cider, or you can be a good Samaritan and give them away, which I have chose to do, is to give them away, be a good Samaritan. And in the past few years, I've been donating what apples I had left to the Goodfellows organizations and also the fish. And they in turn collect them after I get done, just prior to Christmas, and they give them to the Haiti families. Mm-hmm. So this is my contribution.
That's quite a sizable one.
Yeah. So it's not, as people might think, it's not a tax write-off. It's just out of the goodness of your heart, because you cannot write off something you've already deducted expenses on. Uh-huh. So you've grown and you've already taken half the expense on growing and this and that. So you can't really take deductions on it. I've never tried to, so this is just something I've done. I don't know what the continuation of this place will be as far as the orchard, the farm, the market. I'm getting to the point of my life where it's getting more harder for me to do each year because of the fact I am now 62 years old, and it's a lot of pressure for someone to take this through those months, because you're talking 4 months, because you're talking 7 days a week and probably 12 to 14 hours a day. So it's very, very possible that I will be selling the place, and I do hope that this stays as what it is for the sake of everyone in the area. But that I can't really control. I hope someone buys it to use it as an orchard and a market. And,
the price of real estate in Northville is rather doubtful, isn't it?
Yes. So I'm at that point in my life where I've got to make some type of decision. If something happened to me, and I'm the only one that can run it, and it would be sold immediately. So,
how many employees do you have?
Right now, I've got about 4 full-time workers and probably about 6 pickers. But then that is just on the, it's a seasonal thing he's done too. They come up from the south, help me out, and some of them I've known for years. I used to maintain a year-round man or two, but I don't, like I say, I don't have the orchards anymore, so I can't do that. So these fellows basically come up and help me in the fall on, and sometimes in the summer a little bit. The back after it closed.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Farman.
Well, I thank you for your coming out and being able to take this conversation, and what has been a good share of my life.
Good.